Well, my name is Perry Lorenz. I put together a team, myself, Larry Warshaw, and then Trammell Crowe. Our company was called Constructive Ventures. The name Independent was chosen primarily by the capital partners, by Aspen Heights, a really good outfit. I actually put the team together to respond to a request for proposals for the Green Water Treatment Plant, which was a great big lot in downtown Austin that had an antiquated water treatment plant where they would take water out of Town Lake and deal with it and turn it into drinking water. But it was inefficient, it was old school, it was four times bigger than it needed to be, and the city fathers decided the best thing to do with it was to get somebody to develop it, create tax base, create some vitality downtown. And this was a little bit before there was this huge, when that Austin became the center of downtown universes where exciting things were happening. The city was trying to make something happen rather than so much as responding to a lot of activity. So I and a friend, Larry Warshaw, we put together a team. We got Trammell Crowe on our side because they had a big balance sheet, and we decided to come up with a proposal that we thought the city would really respond to. We understood community values. We understood that what the city really wanted was high value ad valorem tax base. They wanted residential. They wanted it to be green, sustainable, and check all those boxes. And we put together a proposal. There were, I don't know, at one point about six proposers. They got narrowed down to four. And finally, we were chosen. So then it was like the dog catching the garbage truck. We had to figure out what in the world are we going to do now? And it was really two tracks. It was a big track that ultimately came bifurcated with streets and ended up being four blocks downtown. And then there was a second parcel, tangential, 60,000 square feet, that was people didn't talk a lot about, but in essence, we had both of those tracks. In the end, we let Trammell Crowe take the big track there into building streets and getting them accepted for maintenance and all that goes with it, the contacts for financing and everything else. And my partner and I, Larry Warshaw, we took the 60,000 foot track, and that's where the Independent is. And I think that's the subject of today's conversation and attention. And we did all we could to build a very appealing building, we thought, that the market would readily accept, and that we could get financing. Ultimately, we took on Aspen Heights as a partner, and they're the ones that were able to arrange financing in the end. But again, we checked all the boxes. We thought we had the best plans and so forth, and we ended up building the Independent. The city was on our side. They were very cooperative. Obviously, they wanted it to work. And it's a nice thing to have the city fathers pulling for you instead of raising obstacles. It turned out being just an outright sale of land. But the city basically was in control right up to the end. There were a laundry list of things that we gave beyond just cash for the land. I had the ability to convey a part of Shoal Creek. The Shoal Creek Trail is kind of a big deal, hikers, bikers, what have you. And there was an area where you had to get out of the creek and get into the street and then re-enter the creek hundreds of feet later. It was very awkward and didn't make a lot of sense. And I was able to convey that tract that nobody could ever figure out how to get before. I bought it from a guy who just wasn't going to cooperate with the city, but then I had it, and so I was willing to contribute that as part of the consideration. Promised a lot of the pedestrian amenities, to spend $250,000 in the creek, to try to straighten out an area where it was a very awkward configuration. That in itself got complicated beyond the scope of this conversation. But multiple other things, and I think part of the reason that we, our group, prevailed and we got it is our understanding of community benefits and community values and what the city wanted and what the city fathers wanted. So I think that was a pretty big advantage. Well, the height, it had really, the city of Austin let go of height restrictions per se some time ago. And because there are no Capitol view corridor implications, it's not blocking anybody's view of anything. As far as the city's concerned, we do have many Capitol view corridors that are well-defined to protect views from certain areas, and this is not one of them. So we could build to the sky. So at the time we built it and it was completed, it was the tallest residential building west of the Mississippi. Now I think there are a couple others that may have eclipsed it, so that is no longer the case. But it's still, at the time, was an amazingly tall building. I think there's one, maybe two, that are under construction that are going to be taller. But by Austin standards, it's very tall. It also has that sort of cantilevered construction. That's why they sort of referred to it as the Jenga Tower. That's the press referred to it as it was going up. I think it's obvious what I'm talking about if you look at it. But again, it was very well received and went about as smoothly as any of those big building projects can. There are always issues and dilemmas during construction, but all were gotten through, and it turned out, I think everybody's happy. The buyers are happy. The developers are happy. The city's happy. So I'm declaring victory. As far as the financing goes, once we had a shovel in the ground, had committed to the city all the things that we said we would do if we got the project. Once all of that was accomplished, we took on a partner, Aspen Heights, and they basically arranged the financing. Basically, it was CIM. Insiders know what that is. I think it's Beverly Hills operation that put up the debt and the equity. Once we started, people were pretty excited about it. Everybody was. But then we had a hiccup. I guess I'm bad on dates, 2007, 2008, and capital markets were a little weird and things got a little scary. It was less than a total home run all of a sudden. And it was bleak. And then all of a sudden, Austin, Texas just boomed. And there were several other downtowns similarly behaving. Nashville's one, maybe Denver. But then all of a sudden, it just became a no-brainer. I mean, we were selling them well before they were completed. We were selling them off of drawings, and it just wasn't a tough sale. It was just, like I say, in the middle of everything that everybody wanted to be downtown. An interesting aspect is that we've had a real problem with office buildings just real recently. Used to be you could build an office building and it was leased up. You'd build one spec and it would be leased up before construction was finished. But now that's kind of slowed down. And I think the office market's a little nervous. And people said, well, the whole reason people were buying these condos was to live downtown because they work downtown. And so there's a huge it was believed to be a huge correlation between living downtown and working downtown. But it's really proven, to me at least, not to be the case. People that are living downtown are there because of the lifestyle and all that goes on. And yes, some of them work downtown, and so much the better. But working downtown certainly isn't the driving force behind sales of condos downtown. I think we got in just under the wire. It's very difficult these days to finance and to get a contractor to build a high-rise condominium project. The whole combination of a 10-year tail on the liability of it, Texas's consumer protection laws, treble damages for misrepresentations intended or unintended by salespeople. There's just a lot of problems connected with condominiums. And if you notice, hard to enumerate, but the lion's share of high-rises going up are some kind of either apartment rentals or Airbnb or whatever, but just pure outright condo sales are getting tougher and tougher to get financed and to get constructed. Construction companies are scared to death of them. So anyway, we got in under the wire while things were still working out. There didn't seem to be all these problems connected with condominiums. So I think our timing was right. The market was right. It just one of those things that fell together and worked out for us. And again, having the city rooting for you is very, very important. And because they were on our side at the margin, they always tended to go with us instead of against us. So we had a great relationship with the city. The economic development people were great. Margaret Shaw was my contact. She was great. We never, ever got crossed up with the city throughout the whole project. It was a great relationship. There's approximately 350 units. Yeah, it's got a wonderful swimming pool, workout facility, dog park, dining area. So you could, you know, put on a reception of some kind. If you're an owner, you can sign up and get to use that amenities deck. It's tremendously walkable. It's right in the center of action. The new library, all the downtown restaurants, the Shoal Creek hike and bike trail, which joins up with what I call Town Lake, but now it's Lady Bird Lake hike and bike trail. You can walk or you can ride a bicycle to Zilker Park, I would say, within 10 minutes. There's just nothing that isn't around you. And the best thing about it from the city's point of view is that there's not 350 households watering lawns. I think the carbon footprint per capita is very, very low. So again, it's a very Austin-centric thing in that it's got everything going for it. Everything that the city claims it wants, it's got. Ultimately, we built it out, sold it, and sold the units, and the square footage prices were unheard of that we were getting for those condominiums. And I guess the rest is history. All the developer units are sold out. It's an ongoing project. The owners like it, and we're very proud of it.